Well, I started us off last time.
See, this is one of the things we're going to have to fix in the next version of our podcast. Is we have to be professionals. We've been doing this for a year, Ian. We can't just start like we're going to just rely on our wit and charm to carry us through the next 10 seconds.
Well, did you prepare
play us
anything
in.
For the opening?
Play us in. Is it play us in or is it play? I was trying to do Bill O'Reilly's Meltdown on Inside Edition, and then I realized I hadn't seen that in a long time.
Yeah, also I don't think, that's not what he says, but that's okay.
We'll do it live is what he says. We'll do it live.
Yeah, we'll do it live.
This fucking thing sucks.
God, he's such a douchebag.
I'm premiering a new character right now is what I'm doing. This is what the pros do, Ian. They have characters on their podcast.
Yeah. Oh, for the record, to remain unbiased, I also hate Bill Maher this week, so.
I think Bill Maher is pretty good.
No, you don't.
Bill Maher is one of those people who, like, 2004, Bobby was all about Bill Maher, would, like, tune in every week to watch his
show. I know
show
a lot of
HBO.
People who, I never was buying what he was selling.
Yeah, well, that's good like on you, because it's not like he's ever, it's not like he ever changed at any point. Bill Maher's just an asshole. He's, like, a terrible person, and he's not funny or insightful, and his show's been on for... What?
Yeah, Bill Maher basically made fun of people who were sad that Stan Lee died this week in this, like, thought piece, and he's stupid, and I hate him.
Not just made fun of them, but he, because as a millennial, millennials are often picked on, and I always cringe a little bit when millennials are like, hey, stop making fun of us, because I'm like, guys, come on, that's exactly what Gen X wants us
to
do.
They're making fun of you for it?
Just eat your $12 avocado toast and it's good. I like avocado toast. It's good. But, like, he was like, it's, like, stupid because people like comic books and shit now, and people, you know, do academia about comic book characters, and that's why Trump got elected. And I'm like, what? It was like he was trying to be edgy and have, like, a big political insight moment. But neither of them.
It was
just stupid.
It's like the worst example of like hot take.
Yeah.
Culture. Yeah.
So,
anyway,
fuck Bill Maher. That's a really edgy take we have.
You're wrong with Ian and Bobby. You're wrong.
So Bobby, do you want to explain your explanation or your exclamation at the beginning, saying we have to figure these things out? do we have anything we want to talk about today?
So we've talked about. Recently about how we want to make some changes to the podcast. Like we're going to likely change its name soon, some other things. But one thing we've been toying around with, I think we're going to test it out today and see how it works, is only doing one topic per week. So we're not, my hope is to give our intro where we're kind of shooting the shit a little room to breathe and also
I agree.
So we're not like sprinting from one disparate topic to another because we rarely choose things that relate to each other. And, I don't want to like pigeonhole us. Like I want us to be able to choose whatever we want, but I also kind of want us to be able to talk more.
Yeah.
At length
about
what we want to talk
yeah.
About.
I think when we started, we thought it would be really funny to fight all the time. And honestly, we don't fight that much because we're friends and we like each other. So, you know, I think
paranoid about, making the other person upset too. So
yeah, that's really, really true. You know, we're going to disagree on stuff, but I think the other thing is, the only piece of feedback I've gotten from people that's been negative about the show that I actually, you know, care about is, this is too damn long, man. So, you know, 2 hours is a lot for a podcast. I think, you know, it's a lot of work to watch or read or whatever, all that much stuff every time. And, you know, I have been known to get overly excited and give long things anyway. So I think that's the idea, is we're going to try to streamline this a little bit more.
And we can feel a little more free to give each other longer stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, I know when we started, we were giving each other like one, I think what our first episode was one episode of Buffy, and I gave you like a 15-minute Lin-Manuel Miranda musical, and we were both kind of like, is this the length you're going for? And I think, now it's a little bit easier for us too in preparing for it. And that way we can talk at length about, you know, bowling in Zelda Breath of the Wild.
Oh my god.
How the battle system works in Xenoblade Chronicles. Things like that, you know?
You're talking about all the things that we thought about cutting out because we babbled for too long about them. You know, I have I'm slightly distracted right now. I will say right before the show started, Bobby and I were talking about old projects of ours that we worked on together, comic books and things like that that we did in high school and college. And we don't have to get into the specifics of them because they're of an age and they're a little embarrassing. But I had the thought right after because we were basically making fun of how, you know, silly we were back then. And then I just had this horrible thought where I'm like, in 10 years, are we going to look back and be like, oh no, we just really liked podcasts and we're mimicking every podcast that we ever listened to. So I've been existentially shook by this conversation, Bobby. I'm
wondering if the only, cause I think about this constantly, especially when we have to, especially when each week one of us has to revisit the entire conversation in detail to edit it.
Right. Right.
Like, I will perhaps be a little bit embarrassed that we, you know, were a little bit self-important about the video games we were playing. I think the thing that most immediately makes me want to, like, cringe is how terrified we are of having the wrong social take on something. Like,
right.
When we were talking about, you know, sexual assault in The Sopranos, how we were both like, listen, we're both allies. We both take sexual assault very seriously, which of course we do.
I considered taking sections of that out, actually, when I was editing, just because I'm like, we will not shut up about how much we understand that rape is bad. Like that.
Guys, we don't like rape. Thumbs anyway, down.
By the way, also for the record, I have been very, very sick for the last couple of weeks, which is why we're a little late in recording this episode. So if I'm coughing a bit here or there, I sound like I have a frog in my throat. I am on the mend currently, but the wildfires up here are not helping the situation, I will tell you.
No, the wildfires are terrible. Yeah, I forgot that you're in Northern California.
Oh, yeah. It's been, I fully lost my voice last week when I was still pretty much already better just because of the smoke. And then a bunch of my schools were shut down Thursday and Friday this week for quality control concerns. So
my family members anyway, who live in Palo Alto have been wearing face masks.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Oh, yeah. A lot of students wearing painter's masks walking around. It's an interesting time to be alive. Bobby, I have a bone to pick with you.
Yes.
Look, Bobby is my video game friend, and a new video game came out this week.
Yeah, it did.
That I am, you know, and I'm excited about it.
I've been playing it.
Yeah. Fuck you. Okay, the new video game that everybody is talking about. No. We're talking about the game, you know, that's in the zeitgeist that everybody's tweeting about, that, you know, South Park is making episodes about, that is just kind of the central game in the world, which of course is Red Dead Redemption 2, which I will talk about extensively probably today because I fucking love it. It's a perfect video game. And what are you playing right now, Bobby?
Well, I have played about the first hour and a half to 2 hours.
Oh, cool. That's fun for me to talk with you about.
Listen, I have no doubt that Red Dead 2 is going to be an engrossing, incredible experience, that it's going to be one of the best games I've ever played. The first hour and a half do not, like, grab you by the balls and shove you into the game.
I agree. That's true.
It starts like a slow Western.
Yeah. So for instance, you would much prefer to play a game where you can dress yourself and your pet up like sailors, for example.
Oh, we're dressed up like Team Rocket right now, so it's pretty good.
Well, okay, that seems...
We're infiltrating a Team Rocket race together.
I see.
And so, of course, I'm playing Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu, Ian, and
yes.
I thought it would just be like a silly Switch game to own, but as soon as...
Before you continue, what was it you were saying a minute ago about the self-importance of our video game playing? You said, I just don't remember exactly what you said. Sorry, go ahead. I'm just saying
this is the most efficiently packaged nostalgia bomb I've ever played, and I realized if a game starts with a anime doctor telling me to go out into the world and catch Pokemon and fight and become like... the chosen one of Pokemon, I'm like, sure, I'll do it. Yeah, that's fine.
I agree. That's a narrative that will always pull
this
me back in.
This game came out on Friday, and I have spent like 15 hours playing it.
Well, I have spent probably about that much time playing Red Dead this weekend. I will say, I agree with you. I think the first 4 hours or so are extremely cutscene laden, and there's a lot of setup. Once the game opens up, Bobby, this is the most immersive, complete video game I think I've ever played in my life.
Yeah.
Honestly, the pacing is very strange for a AAA video game. It's very slow. It's very, like, methodical. And I love that about it. Last night, I went out and went on a hunting raid and took out some legendary animals and brought a bunch of pelts back to camp so I could make some new stuff. And the day before, you know, it was Friday. I had a hard week, and so my cowboy went into town. We went into the local city, the only city in town where there's electricity, and we, you know, bought some new clothes, got a bath and a haircut. We went to see a vaudeville show, played a little poker, you know, had a night on the town. It was a nice night for my cowboy.
That's good, because I you know, after a hard week, it's nice having like a good night where you
look. There's something. Okay, so here's the thing. Like cowboys are really just like, it's a bunch of kids playing. Like, it's just, the stakes are real, right? You know, like, everybody's just playing at Might Makes Right and individuality. And there's something, like, really charming about that in a video game form. But, Bobby, like, the stuff that happens in this game, man. Like, I have a lot of cool things I want to talk about. I can't with you because I don't want to ruin any of
okay,
it.
Yeah,
there's insane things that happen. Yeah.
You know what's interesting? I was thinking about video game...
Yeah, I guess I'll shut up about Red Dead now, because I think we should wait to really talk about it until you've played more.
No, that's fine. But I was thinking specifically about the way Red Dead was marketed, and I don't know. It's Rockstar Games. I'm not speaking specifically about Red Dead 2. Rockstar Games have like an interesting, the narrative of those games is an appeal, but I think the appeal, I'm not saying they half-ass their stories or anything.
Well, here's what can I say something to that? I think that I agree with you. If you're talking about what I think you're talking about, are you talking about the kind of like South Park-y, like everybody's stupid but me?
No.
Like
the,
okay.
No, I was just saying. I think the broad appeal of Rockstar Games is their immersiveness and how much detail is put into that world. What I was going to say is. And I think Red Dead 1 has the best story of any Rockstar game I've played.
Yeah.
But the marketing of Red Dead games, you can't like do this with a movie, obviously. I was hyped for Red Dead 2. I went and bought it the day it came out from the store because I wasn't going to download it because the download file is obscenely large.
Right.
But I had just assumed, I knew nothing about the story of this game, I had just assumed that it was going to be another cowboy, another, like, a whole other set of
characters.
And I got, like, 20 minutes into the game before I realized the very obvious connection it has with the first Red Dead 1, and I'm like, oh! Right.
I think that's intentional. I've talked to, like, 3 other people who had that moment, too. I think it actually, I need to rewatch it. I feel like it slightly hides that for the first few minutes. Like, it only throws characters at you that you don't know well.
I mean, you meet Dutch right away.
But it's like, yeah, I guess you're right. I guess it's just, I don't know. It's interesting. I will say that this world, this type of world, is maybe more conducive to the open world style of Red Dead than any, like, it's like, I think this is a much more efficient way to do this type of video game than Grand Theft Auto. If that makes sense.
Sure.
Yeah. Like the way that you kind of like search out people who have missions for you and stuff, like all that stuff, all that, that Grand Theft Auto, like engine stuff. It works so well in this world. Anyway, if you let me, I will just keep saying I love Red Dead over and over. So we should, move away from that. Have you seen any movies recently or anything?
It does feel like the opposite of, we talked at length about Spider-Man, last episode, Spider-Man is still, I have the DLC downloaded. It's like,
I mean, I'm really reeling from the fact that I've been this into 2 video games in a row. That's pretty rare for me.
But it feels like whatever the opposite approach to open world of Spider-Man, where Spider-Man's like, big playground, have fun. Red Dead's like, right. Trek through the snow for 20 minutes, you know?
Well, okay, but it doesn't, you'll see it.
Yeah, I mean, like,
once it opens up, like, there's just people everywhere and you can do whatever you want with any of them. Like, you can just walk up to homesteads and tie everybody up and take all their stuff and drive off again. Or you can, like, sit down and talk to them and play poker for 3 hours and, like, learn about their families. It's really insane.
Ambitious video games occupy this interesting space. Like, I feel like we don't entirely know what the rules are and how to talk about them. But, yeah. Like, if a movie took 4 hours to open up, I feel like we'd be like,
yeah, I know.
This is bullshit. But in a game, it feels reasonable, but also it's like 4 hours of my life, you know? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I will say when I was where you were now, I was not interested yet.
I have this problem, by the way, 6 hours into Witcher 3, which is a game that everyone universally loves, and I'm just like, I don't get it. I'm so
this is
bored
different.
Out of my mind.
This feels like they have, what's cool about this is when you realize that they've created a real life rest world for you. Like, there are these characters on loops that are just insane, and they don't even have to do with you a lot of the time, so you're just people watching these insane things.
It's interesting.
It's really cool, man. It's really cool.
But, like, can you ride on the back of a Charizard?
Well, there aren't any Charizards, but I can name my horse Charizard and color it orange.
Yeah, but can your horse have mane of fire, like a Rapidash?
I just fought a lion.
There are no lions in Pokemon Let's Go. Pikachu.
Yeah, so there you go.
There you go. Okay. I don't even know. Are there any lion Pokemon? There has to be, right?
Not in first gen, I don't think.
But, like, eventually, right?
This is great podcasting. Let's go through all of the generations of Pokemon and figure out which one looks the most like a lion.
I'm freaking out. I'm like, is there a lion Pokemon? This feels like
there is a lion Pokemon.
What is it called?
I don't know, but there's a lion Pokemon somewhere. Okay, I'm Googling lion Pokemon right now.
Me too. How many generations did it take?
This is the worst podcast we've ever done. Lion Pokemon Sun was the autocomplete. Yeah, there's the Litleo.
That's later. Pokemon Sun was, like, literally the last one, right? Did you play Pokemon Red, Blue, Yellow, Ian?
Yes, I did.
So, just very briefly, this is a small but weird thing about Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu and Let's Go Eevee. It's basically a remake of Pokemon Yellow. Plot point for plot point. And again, the stories don't matter in Pokemon.
Hard disagree.
The same thing happens. You play a kid from Pallet Town who is not Red, who's not Red or Ash or whoever you want to call him, but lives in the same house. He lives next door to his, like, best friend slash rival, who is not Blue, not Gary. But, like, the same thing happens until, like, two towns in, you meet Blue slash Gary,
oh, that's kind of cool.
And he's, like, your mentor through the game. But I'm like, wait, so he exists, but, like, we're living his life. I don't understand.
wait. But no, maybe he just, like, sold his house and you bought it.
I guess.
Maybe that house has, like, a curse on it where anybody who lives there is cursed to become a Pokemon master.
But then Professor Oak at no point goes, you know what's really weird? Is this exact same journey happened.
You're right. Is that the video game you wanted? You wanted that, Bobby? You wanted, like, I don't know, fucking postmodern Pokemon?
Why couldn't you be a kid who started out in Celadon City? Couldn't you be a big city kid, not, like, the kid from Palatine?
What are you doing?
Who lives in the only house that in town? Does he ever freak out that he lives in one of two residences in the entire city? Like, does he ever stop and take a look at his life and go, like, what am I doing? Like, does he wake up each morning a different child? Like, wandering into the grass and like, running into a Pokemon and almost getting killed by the Pokemon until this professor, like, saves him. And is Professor Oak just, like, manufacturing this scenario over and over again? Pokemon's weird. So they did away with random battles.
They did? Why'd they get rid of random battles?
It's
That's
cool.
Bullshit.
You wander through the grass and Pokemon wander around in the grass, but you can see them. So you could, like...
Oh, okay. Yeah. So you fight them, but it's... Okay, got
it.
It's
easy to avoid them if you want to. It's good, man. It's a good
after,
game.
After I play about 300 more hours of Red Dead, I'm sure I'll try it out.
Yeah.
Bobby, Overlord is a really good movie.
Is it?
Yeah, I loved it. I highly recommend Overlord. If you are into genre film at all, it is a really, really good, like, AAA grindhouse movie. It's batshit crazy in the best way. It does this really smart thing of, like, being extremely grounded in how it portrays these, like, the first, you know what it does? It basically does what Predator does. Like, it the first 45 minutes is just, like, soldiers in a situation, and then all the crazy shit starts happening. So when it starts happening, these characters are like, I don't even know. When the crazy stuff starts happening, it feels like you're watching a period piece about World War II. And so it makes it seem so much more insane. It's great. I can't speak enough about it.
Is it like how in Cowboys and Aliens, it was like a Western until the alien showed up? And then it still felt like a Western, but they were dealing with aliens?
Cowboys and Aliens was not good. You know it wasn't good. Neither of us saw it. And I guarantee you that in that movie, it probably... Okay. Doesn't that movie open with, like, some spaceship landing or something? I'm sure that movie did not have the wherewithal to just make a cowboy movie for 45 minutes.
Well, it's a cowboy movie and then a spaceship lands.
Oh, my God. I hate you so much. Bobby...
Olivia Wilde is a space person.
My next pick now is Overlord.
Okay. Who directed it? I know Bad Robot, it like, produced it.
Right? Isn't it Abrams? I thought it was Abrams, actually. Does Maybe Abrams I'm wrong.
Direct anything anymore?
I believe he directed it.
I think you're wrong. I think he produced it. I don't think he directed it. I just wish you did your homework sometimes, you know? It's like we look like a really shoddy operation when you just throw out these falsehoods into the ether and we're...
Damn it, he didn't direct it. I really thought I was right.
He did produce it, though.
Yeah, he did. And it's good, man. It's really fun. Anyway, that's all I really wanted to talk about this week. I haven't done much more than that.
I watched a 5-hour YouTube docuseries about Jake Paul.
Is this... Yeah, what? Okay, explain this to me, because talking about this.
I don't even know how to describe it. It was like the number one trending thing on YouTube for several weeks. Jake Paul is famously...
Which everyone knows means it's good.
So there's two parts of this, and I'm an old person. I'm way older than, like, the YouTube generation, and I'm trying my best not to, like, have my arms folded across my chest and go, like, this is all stupid. Sure. Even though, like, every part of my brain is screaming, like, what the fuck is any of this? Because I don't understand it.
Yeah, I don't either, and I don't really care to. Like, what made you decide, like, oh, I need to watch this documentary?
I don't know. Okay, so
about Jake Paul.
So there's let me explain. There are two parts of this. Okay, so there's Jake Paul,
who's Jake Paul?
Jake Paul. Most people is a very famous YouTuber. I think is what
he used to be on Disney Channel or something, right?
I don't think he did. I think he's always been a YouTuber.
I thought he was like, oh, okay.
He's Logan Paul's little brother, and he's famous for just doing...
Oh, that's what... Isn't Logan Paul... Oh, okay. Here's my first hurdle. I thought Logan Paul and Jake Paul were the same person.
No.
Logan Paul's the suicide forest guy, right? Yes. Okay.
Jake Paul's his little brother, who is famous for just, like, doing stupid stunts and shit and for being an asshole on YouTube.
So he's as bad as his brother.
Yeah. And so both of them, well, I don't know if he's as bad as his brother, but, like, he would do, so they both have, like, an absurd amount of money. And so Jake Paul, formed this team, this company, this conglomerate of YouTubers called Team 10, and he bought this giant mansion where he, like, houses everyone in his YouTube circle, and they all just, like, live there and create content together, but, like, he's famous for, like...
So it's like the Jackass meets the Real World.
Kind
like
of.
House.
Yeah, and so, like, but he's done shit, like, his fans have, like, hoarded outside of his house and caused, like, disturbances in the neighborhood, or, like, he's lit a gigantic fire in his backyard that almost, like, lit his house on fire. Shit like that,
right,
you know?
Right, right, right. Okay.
So the other part of this is Shane Dawson, who's a little bit older. Jake Paul's, like, 22, 23, I think.
Okay.
Shane Dawson's, like, 30. He's, like, one of the ground floor YouTube stars. But he's been doing these documentaries on YouTube recently. Like, the reason I found this is because, God, I feel like such a fucking idiot. I feel like it's weird because I feel like an insane person talking about this, but I know this is
you are.
This is not outside of, like, this is, whatever. But so,
Wait. No, finish that thought, because I'm so curious to see what the end of that thought was.
Because, what I'm saying is, like, a 35-year-old looking at me talking like this is just like, what the fuck is he talking about? And then a 20-year-old looking at me talking about this is just like, he's such a fucking idiot who's super uncool, you know? And I just
you're either talking in a language you don't understand that makes you sound like you're an idiot, or
I feel like I'm reading off of like a menu and not knowing how to pronounce any of the items on it. Okay. But the reason I found Shane Dawson, I knew about Shane Dawson because he was on this show a few years ago called The Chair, where two directors first time directors tackled the same screenplay, and they both came up with movies. Shane Dawson's was terrible, but he won
he was one of the two directors.
Yeah, he's a YouTube star then. His movie was really fucking bad, but he did a documentary series recently on TanaCon.
Wait, did you watch his movie?
I watched most of it, yeah.
Did you watch this series when it was on or something?
I watched some of the series. I just wanted to watch both the movies because I thought it would be interesting to watch two movies take on the same screen.
So is that why you saw this and was like, oh, I need to know more about this?
Well, no, how Shane Dawson is on my radar, is because
that's what I mean.
I watched his movie a long time ago. But the... For whatever reason, because
that's the part of this that's most fascinating to me is like, at which point did your brain say like, I have to understand?
I'm trying
this.
To bring you like, I'm trying to bring you there. I'm trying to walk you through my process.
Okay.
Do you know what TanaCon is?
No.
Okay, so there's VidCon is the YouTube convention.
Oh fuck you!
And so another YouTuber named Tana Mojo got into like a beef, I guess, with VidCon and tried to create her own convention in Anaheim. Sure. And it was all over the news because it was like a total mess and like it was really poorly planned and like teenage girls were like passing out from heat stroke in the parking lot of like this hotel in Anaheim. And he did, Shane Dawson, who I guess is friends with her, did like a 3-part documentary series on YouTube about what happened at TanaCon. And I watched all of it and thought it was very, very fascinating. But also, it felt like I was peeking in on a culture I didn't totally understand.
Yeah, no, I could see that story being interesting in some way, for sure. Especially if it's like made by somebody who I was already vaguely familiar with their artistic like world.
And so he did TanaCon. He did, I guess, another documentary series I haven't seen where he like confronts issues he had with his like father growing up. He did a documentary series about Jeffree Star, who's like a fashion and makeup persona who we actually went to high school with, by the way.
What, really?
Yeah. Anyway, weird. And then so Jake Paul, I guess, is his next thing that he wanted to do.
Sure, why not?
And I don't know, man, the whole time it was like fascinating because it's like, mm-hmm. Jake Paul is a child who has too much, who got a lot.
That's at, you, period.
At once.
Jake Paul is a child who has too much, I think is fine.
And he just got a lot at once. And so he's like, if you handed a 15-year-old millions of dollars and said, what do you want to do with
it? Of course.
You're like, well, I want to buy a mansion with my friends and we can have like a big trampoline in the foyer kind of thing.
You know? Yeah, of course.
But Shane Dawson approaches this as like, is Jake Paul a sociopath? And so he spends, I think Jake Paul, or Shane Dawson, maybe because he's like, there's a little bit of, I mean,
how old is Shane Dawson?
He's about 30. And he seems like, he seems like he has an okay head on his shoulders. But maybe like there's a little bit of self-importance coming off of these other docuseries that were like well received.
Sure.
He spends the first like 3 episodes just like talking to like a YouTube psychologist and like doing research on sociopaths, and it's edited in a way where he's like sociopath, you know, like the psychologist will be like, sociopaths, you know, have no regard for other people. They're great at manipulating people. Reaction shot from Shane Dawson where he's like, oh my God, I'm so scared.
Right.
Like cut in screams from horror movies, like that kind of shit.
Wait, what?
For like And each of these episodes is like an hour long, and I watched every single one of them, Ian. And then when he finally meets Jake Paul, immediately you're like, oh, this kid's just like a sad kid who has a ton of money, you know?
Right, right.
So I don't know. It was just fascinating. I'm like peeking in on this culture I don't totally understand, and I'm not saying that as a judgmental way. I'm just like watching this. Nothing has ever made me feel so old in my life. Like, I was...
What is the reason? Because at one point you were threatening to pick this for the show. What made you decide not to do that?
Because I don't see the point. Because I think this is all I have to say about it. It's just like, Ian, I feel so old. Also, it's like 5 hours long when you take all the episodes together. And I don't know why it exists. And I don't think Shane Dawson is like in a position to be able to like credibly do this. You know, like he doesn't have any.
So for the record, in the last couple of weeks, you're complaining about a video game taking 4 hours to open up. you watched 5 hours of a YouTube docuseries.
Listen,
about whether a 20-year-old is a sociopath.
What you're saying is completely fair. But then part of me is like, when Shane Dawson's like talking to this YouTube psychologist and was like, you know what we need to do is, I think the only way we can get a the only way we can get an accurate appraisal is to have you pretend to be my assistant and sit next to me while I interview Jake Paul. I'm like, yeah, makes sense. I want to watch this.
I hate you so much.
So why didn't we get into YouTube? It's what I want to say.
I'm so glad we never got into YouTube.
We were speaking earlier about our creative endeavors, Ian. We were circa 2004. We were looking for creative outlets.
Oh yeah,
there's an alternate universe where the two of us. I think we were about
5 years too early for it, and I'm glad.
We could have, you know, like become YouTube personalities in another life, you know.
Oh God, that's a nightmare. Don't even say that to me. Bobby, should we get to the show?
No, I think we're good.
yeah. So we're going to be are we doing new songs?
Well, I mean, this time we're still You're Wrong with Ian and Bobby, but we will, right?
Sure. I was just making sure I understood what all that.
So cherish this one while you can. This one's an oldie.
I know,
oldie,
this might be
goodie.
The last time you hear it.
Experience the spirit's wonder. Experience laughter. Experience sound. Experience love. Experience life. Experience lust. Experience pain. Experience Bobby.
I'm really proud of that one.
You always you definitely beat me. I mine is the first attempt ever at using GarageBand, and it was a bad one. And I mostly put it up because I thought it would be funny to include a bad one, and then it stopped being a joke after a while because I just got lazy and didn't want to make a new song.
I like yours. I think it is very charming and very funny.
Including the click on the mouse in the middle of it that I never took out.
Yeah, no, but I, you know, it sounds like a thing on a drum kit. It always puzzled me until you mentioned that it was a mouse click, and I'm like, oh, yeah, right, that makes sense.
So, Bobby, what did you pick for us to watch this week?
All right, so I picked two episodes of the first season of Survivor.
Which I've never seen at all.
You've never seen any Survivor?
Not a single episode of Survivor.
You knew who Richard Hatch was.
I knew who Richard Hatch was just because I live in the universe, and he was on the cover of every magazine when he won the first time.
But, I was really curious if you knew who he was and if you had known who
I knew. I knew who he won, and I think I knew that he was gay, and that's about it. I don't think I knew anything else about him. In fact, when I first started, I kind of think I thought that Rudy was Richard. I thought that he was older than he was.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
So Richard's so that's only about like all I knew.
38 or something when the show is being filmed, which is crazy because Richard looks
that's
pretty old.
So why don't you kind of like introduce us, and then I'll, because I wrote down basically same thing I did last time because I enjoyed doing this. I just wrote down a lot of like single sentence thoughts that I had throughout, so we can maybe get to those in a little bit.
Okay. Yeah, no, I wrote down nothing, so I'm curious to hear what you had to say. But just, you know, why I picked this. I, like, full disclosure, I was obsessed with Survivor when it came out. It came out, I think, in the like the summer between 8th and 9th grade for us.
And
I came in a few episodes late. It was before streaming, so I had to wait a long time to rewatch those first episodes I missed. But I was obsessed with it. I was
Bobby was really into reality TV when we were young.
It's true.
When I first knew him in high school, I remember we had to do a school project that involved a video once, and that always for me meant trying to basically make sketch comedy. And Bobby decided that he really, really wanted to mimic to spoof American Idol. And I remember like it was very important to you that you kept saying dog over and over in this video.
Because that's what
And it was very important to you that we found cups that had logos on them that faced out. That was the other thing. You really wanted to, and we didn't have Coca-Cola glasses, so they were just like random cups with the logos facing out.
It was, I mean, like, you want to, there's a certain level of production. There's, like, a certain integrity.
So I'm just saying, this is Bobby's, so here's the thing, because I would say more than me, by a lot, you have less anger towards reality television than I do.
Yeah, for sure.
I don't really watch a lot of reality TV, and I would say you watch a lot more of it than I do. You understand and appreciate the trappings of it in general more than I do. I'm just saying, like, I'm not saying what I think about this episode or this show. I'm saying, like, this is our history with reality television,
yeah,
I would say.
And what's interesting, though, is I mean, I don't want to say I don't watch reality TV at all. I don't watch reality TV at all because I don't consider shows like...
Here's more what I mean. I don't think you watch reality TV a lot. I think if a show got really, really huge that was a reality TV show, you would check it out and I wouldn't.
Sure.
Like, that's, I would be like, yeah, that's not, I'm not interested. And you would be like, yeah, I want to see what the fuss is all about. Like, you, does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, what I was going to say is, like, the popularity of certain shows. Like, I watch The Great British Bake Off, or I watch, I watch Queer Eye for the Straight Guy now.
Right.
But I don't, even though those get grouped in with reality shows, and I think largely they owe their success to shows like Survivor, I don't really consider them reality shows because they don't focus on the living together aspect, if that makes sense, documentary aspect of it. And I think that is largely what Survivor was. But why I picked Survivor now is because I think this is ground zero for reality competition shows.
I agree.
Up until this point, there was Real World, which I mean is certainly very culturally relevant and quite frankly a better show than this. But Survivor is where it all starts. I mean, when you really want to think about it, Survivor is even, you know, we owe a generation of television, and we probably also owe our president to what Survivor started, you know?
Yay!
Yeah. But
no, everybody knows that was Stan Lee's fault, Bobby.
But the first season of Survivor is interesting to me still in a bubble because it is it's a reality competition show that exists without any context for reality competition television.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. So that was the first thing I wrote down was like how low res the show is. It feels like they literally just got like 5 cameramen and put a bunch of people. I mean, this sounds stupid because I know that's what it is, but like there's no, the chyrons are really, really cheap. Like this must have been the cheapest like hit television show in the history of television. Like it's insane how much it just feels like
the budget was like spent nature entirely on its location. Yeah. Like you travel to Borneo, you have to figure out how to house your crew in Borneo, but then like the challenges and stuff are fairly quaint. I was watching, my mom walked in for part of me watching one of these episodes, and we're watching the tribal council, which is the thing that happens at the end of every episode where they vote someone off the island. And my mom was talking about how the production looks very the editing, there wasn't a ton of music playing over.
Yeah, it's very, that's what I mean. It's very like, it's very low fidelity. Like it's not, it's unplugged a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, except for that super beautiful box of $1 million that they have sitting off to the side during the tribal councils, which really makes it more immersive. You know, it helps you forget that you're watching a reality show when there's a giant box of American cash sitting off to the side there. I rolled my eyes at that. There was not a whole lot of things I did not like about the show. That was one of the things that I was like, what are you doing here?
It's definitely actually $1 million in that chest right there.
Yeah. Definitely real. I will say I also kind of laughed at the Brian Fellows music of it all. It the whole thing just felt like Animal Planet, like safari music in a way that was kind of funny to me.
Full disclosure, Ian, can I tell you something? That
you own the soundtrack.
I bought the soundtrack as a child.
Yeah, of course.
As a young teenager. And right. It got jammed into the CD player of my grandpa's Nissan.
Your poor grandparents. You are like, your grandpa has to explain for the rest of his life how his CD player doesn't work because his grandson broke it with the Survivor
soundtrack.
Well, it
wasn't going
soundtrack.
In, and he insisted that I force it in, and I did, and I lost my Survivor soundtrack to his car. And I was not sad for his car. I was sad because I legit listened to the Survivor soundtrack over and over and over. I bought the book that Mark Burnett wrote that was basically just a summary of the first season, and read it during silent reading period at school, and all my classmates laughed at me. Like, I was really into that.
I mean, I would have too. it's pretty much a miracle that we became friends, actually.
But okay, so what's interesting, I think, is the forces you have at play in these two episodes. Is you have a bunch of people trying to define exactly what the game of Survivor is.
Right. Well, no. At first, you have one person trying to define what the game of Survivor is, and everybody else is, like, trying to make tents. It's really, really funny to watch Richard be the winner of this game from, like, step one. Like, he's insanely the only one who's aware or self-aware of, like, how this shit works from the moment they step on the island.
Right.
It's yeah.
And so I gave us two episodes. I gave us the very first episode where everyone meets each other, everyone gets to their camps for the first time. And then I gave us the episode after the merger where the two tribes, Tagi and Pagong, have merged together. And Pagong, who's kind of like the younger, more idealistic tribe, has to face fact that Tagi is playing the game as
just a million times better than them. Yeah.
And as, you know, modern reality show contestants played reality show games.
Right,
now.
Right. Yeah. And I also thought it was funny that, like, in that moment where they, you know, they all basically their strongest player gets voted off by the other team, even though they're technically not two teams anymore, which is orchestrated beautifully by the show. That's like a really, really brilliant, like, early reality show move is to, like, artificially create a sense of community and then throw those communities together to see what happens, because the contestants don't realize the show is doing it. You know what I mean? Like, and I felt that a lot in the show. This does feel more real than reality TV shows usually do. There isn't a whole lot of really intense, like, edited moments of like character stuff. It feels really real. I will say the one moment that I was like, oh, this is modern reality TV in, like, the stupidest way was that mom, like, soulfully shooting arrows while crying.
The only thing I'd written down
that's
was...
like that's editing insanity. Like, they absolutely forced her to do that, and it's insane.
Yes. Jenna, who the challenge in the second episode I gave us was for everyone to get good at archery so they can watch a video that their loved one sent from home. Jenna is a young single mother who, her mom doesn't get her video in time. So she doesn't have a video of her, like, very young daughters,
which, by the way, I missed. So I don't know these people as well as you. So I knew there was a mom and I knew this happened to this woman in my head. I, like, didn't realize they were the same person. And so I thought that this person just had, like, their loved one was just like, fuck you, I'm not sending you a video. and so, like, when she cried, and then they're like, but you can send a video back. I totally misunderstood that scene. And I was like, well, she doesn't want to send a video to somebody who doesn't want to talk to her. Like, yeah. But anyway.
It's interesting, the idea that the people who used to be in the Pagong tribe, their view of this game is you should vote for, you know, like, the weakest member of the tribe, or you should not vote out the people who are the strongest. You should They really hone in on kind of the survival.
Which is the first episode, they basically vote out the cancer survivor. Like, this, like, sweet old lady who, like, has cuts on her. Everybody just votes her out.
I know, she's trying her hardest. She's super nice. And then she trips during the challenge and they're like, yeah, you're gone.
Yeah. I will say it was really funny to me. One of the things about the show, I have thoughts about Probst. Probst is cool. I like how little he interacts with them. However, once Tribal Council is happening both times, I felt like he comes off as such a bully.
Yeah.
Because he's the only one in the room who, like, isn't under the knife, right? And so he's asking them questions. Like, he leans over to Sonya and is like, so how are you feeling? Right before the vote. And it's like, well, but obviously, like, everyone's thinking about voting her off because of her age and her health. So, like, you asking that right now is kind of, like, sticking the knife in a little bit. You know what I mean? And then in the second one, when he's, like, asking all of the tribe members if there's really
an alliance,
and they all just lie to his face, it's like, well, yeah, you're not in this. Like, and it's totally appropriate and fine that they're doing this. Like, you're making them look like more villains, or you're trying to. I don't know. It comes off, like, to me, I'm like, yeah, these people are all normal human beings who are in this insane situation, and he's trying to make them look like insane people. Like, so the show is interesting, but it just makes him look like a dick to me.
That moment where he asks Sue and Kelly if there's an alliance is kind of amazing, though, because they are both
the worst liars ever.
For whatever reason, so caught off guard by that question, and they don't know how to answer it. And then they both kind of default to, like, no, I voted off the person I fucking hate, which is somehow like worse than just saying, like, yeah, we're voting people off based on an alliance. Yeah,
absolutely. I think it's really funny that Richard is the only one who is kind of only a dick to people in the testimonials. Like, he only talks shit about people when he's not around them. He also, I got to the point where I was rolling my eyes at him this episode, because he basically becomes the guy who just keeps saying, like, hey, remember when I caught you those fish? Fish, huh? Like, during Tribal Council, the Probst asked him a question. He's like, yeah, I mean, I'm just going to keep trying to catch fish and feeding everybody. That's all I'm going to do. Interesting,
because
you guys like those fish, huh? And he, like, looks over at him again. I'm like, Jesus Christ, Richard.
Richard is winning both games. He's both the most valuable survivor. Like, he's the most valuable contestant, because he's catching them food that isn't, you know, rice and rats. Like, they're eating rats in the first episode.
Right.
And he's also just the best at playing the game. I chose the second episode because this is the moment where Richard locks in the fact that he locks in that the four members of his alliance, which are Richard, Rudy, Sue, and Kelly, are going to win the game. Like, one of them is going to win the game. And it's kind of incredible to watch, because the members of the other tribe realize that there's an alliance. And they realize that they're only...
Well, here's the best part. They're kind of so dumb that they don't even know for sure that it's happening. Like, they all keep saying, if there's an alliance. And I was screaming at the TV, I'm like, there's an alliance. Like, otherwise there's no reason for that to make sense. Like, what do you mean if? Why do you keep saying if? Unless they just made them phrase it that way. I don't know. It made them look kind of dumb.
There are 9 people left in the second episode. There are 4 people in the evil Tagi alliance, and there are 4 people in Pagong, and then there's Sean, who's the kind of stupid Long Island doctor who isn't down for actually playing the game. He's just kind of, like, there to be everyone's friend. And so
here's the thing. I actually thought it was really interesting that he's going in so his thing is he's voting in alphabetical order, right?
Yes.
So nobody's the enemy.
Yes.
But, like, that I think that carries him away.
Well, but,
like,
do you see what happens in this episode? Because it's kind of an amazing moment of...
No, what do you mean?
Okay, so this is what happens in this episode is, so Pagong realizes they have to get their shit together if they want to make it to the end of the game. And they have to reckon with the idea, like, do we want to play the game on these terms that we don't like? And you have people like Greg who are kind of being, like, shitty about it. Like, well, I can't.
Yeah, Greg sucks.
Greg's like,
we'll talk about Greg more.
I can't succeed at this game, so I'm just going to sit here and pout about how shitty it is. But, like, there are 4 of them.
Or just hit on everybody.
Yeah. There are 4 of them. There's Greg, Colleen, Jervis, and Jenna. They're the remainers from the Pagong tribe. And there's 4 people in the Tagi tribe. They have enough to go after, to at least tie the Tagi tribe.
Right.
So Toggy realizes that, and they realize that Sean is going in alphabetical order, and that he voted for Colleen last game. And so next on his list is Greg.
I didn't put that together. So
they use Sean,
his vote against
him. So they have 5 versus 4, and they can kick off, and there's no competition for the rest of the season because, you know, at most they tie.
I did not put that together. That's amazing.
But then the Pagan tribe.
Well, and it's also kind of beautiful that Jervis, who's like the only one everybody kind of hates, is immune. Because the Toggy people are, at least them, all don't like him because he doesn't do anything, and they're very practical, and they can't vote off him, which would be the obvious choice, and they could probably turn people against him because he gets immunity. So that's really funny that they go after Greg instead.
But I was like screaming at my TV too, because the Pagong tribe, they finally like get their minds together, like, we have to vote in a block, and they vote for Jenna, who's like one of their own people, and I'm like, what are you doing?
That's what I mean. It's like, I feel like by the time they get to the tribal council, they have literally forgotten that there is an alliance. Like, it's gone by then. Like, they talk about it a ton at the beginning of the episode, and then they never bring it up again, except for the fact that Propes brings it up.
It's so insane. And then so the rest of the season goes exactly how you think it goes. You know, like, Jenna's next, and then Jervis, and then Colleen, and then Sean, and then you have the four people from the Toggy alliance left. Do you know?
So there's a couple things I want to say really quick.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that I really enjoyed about the show is how little Propst is involved outside of the tribal councils. That makes it feel like there's like the least Heisenberg principle applied to this that I've ever seen in a reality TV show, which is just to say that like they feel like everybody kind of forgets they're on a reality show and they're just living on the beach. I think the thing that was most boring to me about the show was the challenges.
Yeah. I absolutely agree.
And so, like, all of the other stuff, like, made it feel very documentary style in a way that I really liked. It also, like, there's no polish to this, which I like. I'm so sick of how polished and, like, hegemonous reality TV shows are. Like, they all conform to the exact same, like, 5 tricks over and over, and of editing, of design, of everything.
I also think it's a little bit lightning in a bottle in that after this season, every subsequent season is people trying to align themselves with alliances. And
Right.
And it's interesting for 1 or 2 seasons. I only lasted about 2 more seasons.
Yeah.
And then after that, it's the same thing over and over again. It's people. But like I think the struggle in this between like, do we want to idealistically play this game or, you know, hello, do we want to, you know, be cynical
about
this game?
Well, and because it's a reality TV show, like, I imagine it's really interesting to see how much everybody's expectations of what this thing is shifts as it goes. It's also really fascinating to see how the families talk to them about it in the videos, because it's very indicative of what they thought this was going to be before they left.
Right.
You know what I
mean?
Right. Which all of that was fascinating to me. That being said, I want to kill Greg and his sister. They're both his sister's a fucking weirdo, and so is he. When that video starts with her like doing like a horrible racist like Islander impression, I was like, oh, we're in for it. And then it just gets more and more awkward from there.
You know, it's interesting.
Like, you can tell that in her head, she's like, what if I end up on television with this? I could be a star. I'm funny as fuck.
Greg is like that dude who's weird because he needs so much attention on himself, you know?
Yeah.
Well,
and he, like, when he, like, fake cries as he leaves, and then Rudy is like, I believed him for a second. It's like, yeah, because he's fucking really sad and he can't admit it to himself. Like, because he just got faced. And so he has to pretend to fake cry as he walks out because he doesn't care about any of this. Like, I don't know. It's just...
The part that rubs me wrong about Greg, especially, is, like, this episode is the episode where Greg kind of, like...
starts playing gay for pay? Like,
yeah! Well, he starts to try to manipulate people, but then he is also in the confessionals talking about, like, well, yeah, this is, like, a... this is spitting in the face of, you know, Gretchen, who got kicked out last episode, because this is the part of the game she hated. She didn't like all this social backstabbing shit. Yeah. And then he tries it, and then he's bad at it, and then he's just I don't even want to play this game, but this is what the game is. Yeah, of course you don't, because you're terrible at it.
I will say also one of the things that I wrote to you yesterday, which I was just like, yeah, this game is essentially just like, hey, let's find the sociopath. Like that's how you find the winner is, I mean, and I'm not calling Richard Hatch a sociopath. I'm saying like within the context of this game, he knows how to effectively act like a sociopath.
He knows exactly what he's doing. Win. He knows what game he's playing. He's willing to make the, whatever ethical sacrifices he thinks he has to make to win. Yeah. And I don't necessarily have a problem with it.
I kind of love the moment where he's like, yeah, I would, basically he's like, yeah, I would fuck Greg. I'd rather not fuck Greg and have $1 million though. And then he goes, to the tribal council and is like, bye Greg. I was like, yeah, I like Richard. This is great.
Do you know who, okay, my question to you, do you know who comes in second?
No, actually I don't know anything other than Richard is the winner.
Okay, so this is really, I'm going to run you through what happens in the last three episodes, because I remember being 13 and screaming at my TV because I didn't understand anyone. And then when I rewatched the whole thing, I'm like, yes, this makes sense to me. So of course the final four are Susan, Rich, Rudy, and Kelly. They're the
Rudy is hilarious, by the way. I kind of love Rudy.
Rudy was my least favorite watching it when I was 13, and Rudy's great.
Well,
I think
that the pilot at least gives a lot of voice to that woman who doesn't like Rudy.
Yeah, Stacy, and then the attorney.
Yeah, and then by the end we kind of realize like, oh, she sucks a little bit.
She does.
And Rudy's like kind of interesting, and he's obviously like I think she projected a lot onto him as this like alpha dickhead because he was a Navy SEAL, and he's like, he's a nice guy.
Rudy has the biggest arc out of anyone. You know, he's like this conservative military guy, and his best friend on the island is the openly gay dude, you know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That moment where he's like, I formed opinions about these people before I got here, and one of them was Richard, and I was wrong. Richard's strong, and he's cool. And then he says, what does he say? He's like, yeah, he may be fat, but, I mean, he doesn't act fat or something like that. Like, he's just, I don't know. He's very, like, he's not PC, but he's also, like, not a dick.
He says something.
He does judge people based on what they do.
His famous quote from this season is, he goes, you know, Richard and I, he has a really earnest moment where he's like, Richard and I are really close. Like, I respect him as a person. I really like him.
Yeah.
And then he pauses. He goes, not in any homosexual sort of way.
But, yeah, that makes sense.
But so
that's what I mean. Like that doesn't like that's not a hate. That's like a eye rolly thing that an older person would say. But it's also kind of adorable that he like has a like gay friend on the island. I don't know. It's just funny to me.
So when they're down to the final four, so Sue and Kelly have become very close, and I think Sue perhaps projects a little bit onto Kelly as far as like their relationship.
Okay.
But Rich convinces Kelly to turn on Sue. And so Sue gets voted off. And it's a big moment for Sue. She feels very, very hurt.
Hurt, sure.
The final immunity challenge is like this big, long endurance challenge between Rudy, Kelly, and Richard. And basically, the winner of the immunity challenge gets to decide who to kick off.
Okay.
Richard makes the calculation, which in retrospect is really brilliant, because Richard and Rudy made an alliance early on, and it's clear that they both really respect each other, that they're never going to turn on each other.
Right.
Richard drops out of the immunity challenge partway through and goes, you know, I don't want to do this. I'm going to leave it up to you.
Because it's more safe to be that, right?
Like, right.
In the long game.
And so
that's really interesting.
Kelly wins the immunity challenge.
And votes off Richard.
And votes off Rudy.
I mean, votes off Rudy, yeah.
And so at the very end, it's Kelly versus Richard. And Richard wins by one vote. And watching it, and then, you know, like, there are...
Wait, what do you mean one vote? Who votes?
So, oh, everybody from Greg on is the final jury.
Okay.
And they vote on the winner. And I remember watching it and being very surprised that it came that close. Because I was definitely rooting for Kelly. I hated Richard when I was watching it.
Okay.
And, There are certain people like Sue gives this big grandstand.
Is Richard presented as a villain in the show?
I think so, right?
Because I don't feel that way, but I could see how people would read what I have seen that way. But I mean, I like him.
I do too.
I don't
I weirdly think I do too. I respect it at the very least. I don't know if I, I love it, but it's, I think he deserves,
he deserves
his win for sure.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sue gives this big grandstanding speech about how much she hates Kelly, because Kelly's turned on her, and right. Compares Richard to a snake and Kelly to a rat, and says, in the end, the snake eats the rat. And then tells her in front of, she does this big grand speech and tells her in front of everyone, if I saw you dying of thirst on the street, I would not give you a drink of water.
Oh my god!
It's incredible.
Why?
It's like one of the, it's one of the most like famous moments in Survivor history. And
that's
so,
really fun. See, okay, but these are all the moments where I'm like, yeah, I mean, so here's the thing. Here's the thing with reality TV for me. And I want to say this really quick because I've been thinking about it a lot while we're talking about this. I don't like reality TV. But I like it. Like, yeah, but like, I like it though. Like, on a macro sense, I don't like what reality TV does. I think that it's super exploitative to people. And I mean, whatever. I guess if they sign up for it, they sign up for it. But like, it just feels mean to me.
Sure.
But also like, yeah, this is fucking great. Like, I will watch this all day if somebody puts it on in front of me, which I think is why I just avoid reality TV in general. It's like, yeah, I will like it. You're right. That I don't know that I should is my thing, but
a big left
this doesn't feel like that.
That reality TV took at Survivor as opposed to the real world. I think real world's big moments early on are moments of, humanity. Whereas Survivor's big moments
this is orchestrated conflict.
Yeah, moments of conflict.
Yeah, yeah,
are people,
yeah.
Are people functioning at their worst, you know? And so
right, right.
What happens in that final tribal council is you have, you know, you have everyone voting, and they vote basically how you'd expect. But then Jervis and Colleen, when they both cast their final votes, both mentioned that Jervis specifically mentions like, well, I was going to vote for Rich, but after Sue's speech, I want you to win that $1 million and shove it in her face. And then Colleen has the moment that sums up the entire first season of Survivor to me.
You mean your girlfriend?
Yeah, my girlfriend. I had such a crush on Colleen when I was 13. I watching it now, I'm like, boy, I do not get the crush I had on Colleen because she kind of sucks.
Yeah. Does she? I haven't seen a lot of her in this episode or in these
two
episodes.
She's just there.
She seems kind of, yeah, she seems kind of giggly.
She wants to
play.
I
mean, she's obviously a pretty young woman.
Right.
So I could see why, like.
Exactly.
And she's very, like, wallflowery in a way that, yeah.
But she sucks in that she wants to play this idealistic version of Survivor, and she brings, like, nothing to the table, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But so, Colleen gets up to vote, and she just kind of looks into the camera and sits and stares at the paper for a long time, and then just shrugs and writes down Kelly's name and goes like, I was going to vote for the other person, but like, I don't know, man, you're both awful. So I don't know. Like, why don't, I hope you win. I hope you get this money, and I hope you become like a better person or something. And then like puts it in the jar and walks away, and it's incredible. But I was so confused as to why people would vote for Richard over Kelly. And it's because Richard never
He never upset anybody.
Right.
He didn't do anything wrong.
No,
like,
and
yeah.
It's very clear from the beginning that he's playing a very political game. And even though he's never stupid about his plans, he's always stabbing people in the front, you know? And Kelly
legitimately
tries to make connections with people and tries to be people's friends. And she feels bad about what she's doing. And in the process, like, people feel personally betrayed by Kelly for playing this game.
Sure. Right.
The same game that Richard's playing, but like their attitudes are so different, and I think that's
because
so
she has a little bit of real honesty in there. Like it kills her. Last thing I wanted to say that I wrote down, well, Bobby, you sure like shows with a lot of white people in them.
Hey, man, there is there's Jervis. That's it, right? Is he the only person to color in the whole season?
No, there was the woman in the first
episode, Ramona.
Yeah, who just was complaining about how hot it was the whole time.
Yeah, and so both people of color are extremely lazy.
Uncomfortable in the outdoors and yeah.
Jervis can't swim either. That's a thing.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Wait, what the fuck? Why did he even end up they had to swim in the first episode?
He beats There's a big moment later, a few episodes later, I think, where he wins immunity, and it might be next episode. It's a water challenge, and he beats Kelly, who's a kayaking instructor, and she's like in tears afterwards because she's like, I got beat by a guy who can't even swim.
Yeah, this is a good show, man. I enjoyed it very much.
It's interesting because I'm not even, I enjoy watching it. I sort of,
no, but I would watch the first season of the show. I understand.
Yeah, I
get it.
I can't even speak to you if you did a good job
in the sense of just, like, you got me to understand why people watch this.
It's an interesting cultural artifact, if nothing else. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. 100%.
And then Mark Burnett, emboldened by his success from Survivor, made several other, reality TV shows. Some of them are really good.
Yeah, he was,
like The Amazing Race.
What else did he make?
And then,
Amazing Race, that's right.
You know, he wanted to make this, like, business-themed show, and he wanted to pick someone who, like, positioned himself.
Oh, God, yeah. We're not talking about this anymore. Okay, yeah, you're right. I forgot. It's literally Donald Trump. Wow, I forgot that Burnett made
The Apprentice. And the only reason Donald Trump exists as president is because The Apprentice happened.
It's not the only reason, but it's a big, stupid reason.
Donald Trump would be irrelevant in the year 2018 had The Apprentice not happened.
Oh, I mean, there would be a Donald Trump right now.
Oh, there would. I think Donald Trump would still be there, but we would be talking about him the way we talk about, like...
I mean, honestly, would you rather have Donald Trump or Ted Cruz? It's like a hard question to answer.
You know, it's legitimately a hard question to answer. Ted Cruz probably, right?
I honestly don't know. Yeah, I mean, at least then I feel like I don't know. I don't know. We don't need to talk about this. This is horrible.
Hey, Ian, did you know our home county of Orange County, which has been traditionally, historically, like the red
bastion
of Southern California, every single county went blue in this last election?
Yes.
Every single voter district?
I did know that, and it's something that I cling to in moments of frustration with where my family lives.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you for bringing Survivor this week. It feels weird ending there, but I mean, I think we're at about an hour, so that's good. The goal, right? Yeah. So next time we are going to be doing what I talked about on the last episode, which is the 10 issues of Spider-Man by J. Michael Straczynski that we talked about. I don't really think I need to reiterate what that's all about. So check out the last episode and pick those up. All right. Perfect. Well, Bobby.
Yes, sir. So this felt good, right? Like we got to talk about Survivor for a long time. We got to talk about Pokemon for a long time.
No, this is perfect. Yeah. Now you need to play more Red Dead so that we can talk about that. I have a question.
Yes.
That I'm going to ask you on the air. Are we throwing aside the video games for now, or is that still going to be a future of some sort?
How about I'm going to play Red Dead before I play.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, I shouldn't ask you that on the show. Let's cut that.
No, it's fine. I want to play The Last of Us, but I'm probably going to play Red Dead first.
Sure. Cool. All right. Well, I will see you next time for Spider-Man.
All right. Until then, stay.
You're wrong,
Spidey.
Stay Spidey?
Is that like a thing?
You just stole that from Your Favorite Murder. I mean, My Favorite Murder.
I haven't listened to My Favorite Murder in like 2 years. Is that a thing?
They said their sign off is Stay Sexy, and I felt
hang on.
Say that.
You know what? We didn't go for the obvious one.
What?
Excelsior.
No, he's a bad person, Bobby. He's the reason I wrote my dissertation.
We could have ended there, and now we're back to this. We're back to being
okay. Angry. Bye.
Excelsior.
You're